the Joint House Education Committee and House Finance Subcommittee on Education will be called to order. Today's Friday, February 10, 2012. The time is 8:02. House Education Committee members present are Representative Feige, Representative Seaton, and myself, Representative Alan Dick. I'm sure the others are coming. Chairman Wilson, if you take the House Finance Subcommittee on Education role for those members who are not members of the House Education Committee.
Well, that should be pretty easy. I'm Representative Tammy Wilson, and joining us is Representative Kathy Munoz.
Okay, welcome everybody. It's good. We have been hearing from the House Department of Education how it passes funds through to the local districts. So we've asked the finance managers, and this started with Luke Fulp when I was sitting in Kodiak. I was sitting across his desk saying, where's it all go? And he said, I can tell you. And I was so impressed with what he showed me, I said, wait a minute, everybody needs to hear this. So we do have the finance managers from Sitka, Fairbanks, North Star Borough, Lake and Penn Borough, and Kodiak to tell us where the money goes when it does get to the districts. Representative Wilson and I thought, for the record, Representative Kawasaki has joined us. Representative Wilson and I thought it would be a good idea for us to hear these professionals in a joint meeting while we review policy in the Department of Education and Early Development's budget. So, and I would like to say that I've announced this meeting has been well announced in this building, so people had a chance to ask whatever questions they wanted to ask. So give all our presenters equal time. Please, everybody, hold your questions until the end of the presentation. Write them down, and we'll come back to them. The presenters are prepared to scroll back through the PowerPoint presentation to accommodate each of you. First, we will start with Bruce Johnson. If you would introduce your folks here, sir, and we'll go on from there.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators, and it's my pleasure, and we're very appreciative of this opportunity to introduce four of Alaska's finest business officials from kind of four very different school districts. Our goal here was to give you a perspective, statewide perspective, and hopefully we will have done that. They worked very hard in putting this together. We have Luke Fulp from Kodiak Island Borough School District. We have Laurel Hilton from the Lake and Peninsula Borough School District. We have Mike Fisher from Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. And we have David Arp, the business manager from the Sitka School District. So we're going to go in the order that we put the PowerPoint together. Not that there's any magic to that. But we really do appreciate this opportunity, and thank you. And if there's any follow-up, I'd be happy to work with you on that following today's meeting. So thank you, Representative Dick, and members of the committee.
Thank you. Okay, Luke, if you'd come forward, introduce yourself for the record, and also Representative Peggy Wilson has joined us. It's easy to get the Wilsons mixed up here. Okay. Take your liberty, sir.
Thank you, Chairman Dick. My name is Luke Fulp. I'm the Chief Financial Officer at the Kodiak Island Borough School District. I will be presenting our preliminary budget for FY13 this morning and hopefully answering most, if not all, your questions. So, begin the budget presentation with just a quick overview of Kodiak Island Borough School District. By the numbers, we serve a population of 2,500 students. We've got about 420 employees, 14 what we call brick and mortar schools, and one correspondence program, and we serve nine communities. Six of our largest schools are in Kodiak, the city of Kodiak, or outlying areas, and then we have nine rural communities eight rural communities that we serve beyond that. When Chairman Dick was in Kodiak this fall, he mentioned Kodiak Island Borough School District is more or less a microcosm of the state, as we have that urban center and rural villages that we serve as well. So I thought that was a good insight on his part. Budget assumptions going into FY13. We, at Kodiak Island Borough School District and with all the school districts around the state, our revenue is based on the number of students we serve. So each fall we project enrollment. And we have a process for how we project enrollment. That process is documented and we explain it during our budget presentations. Based on some simple cohort survival methods and that sort of thing, I have projected that we will be declining in student enrollment by 7 students, bringing our total average daily membership to 2,512 students. I've also incorporated a reduction of local funding from the Kodiak Island Borough based on an official document that we received this week stating what they have determined their estimate of their local appropriation to be in FY13. So that letter did incorporate a lower funding level than the current year. I also assumed, based on the governor's proposal within his budget, no increases to the base student allocation, so that keeps the base student allocation at $5,680 per adjusted ADM, and no increases in pupil transportation funding. And the reason why that's important with our budget, our operating budget, pupil transportation is its own fund outside of the operating budget, but because of the shortfall that we've experienced with funding to pupil transportation, we are now having to take dollars out of our operating budget and transfer it over into this separate fund. And so this coming year, FY13, I'm projecting that transfer to be $500,000 or $500,000. On the expense side of the budget, there's no salary schedule increases projected. We are in negotiations with our collective bargaining units, and while they will receive increases based on their movement, both laterally and vertically on the salary schedule, we have projected no increases to the salary schedule overall. There will be an early estimate of a 7.2% increase to health insurance based on our brokers' estimates and what they're seeing as far as trend in Alaska. Town utilities, we've talked with our electrical cooperative in town and talked about both what the current rates and the cost of power adjustment based on how often they have to use diesel generators. In Kodiak, we benefit from 3 wind turbines and a hydroelectric dam that provides the majority of our electricity, but we do have a cost of power adjustment built into our kilowatt hours, and so we've been discussing what that will be, and we've been monitoring our utility usage, and so that just is food for thought, but a lot goes into projecting that expense, as well as fuel, where we projected at $3.50 per gallon, and that's just based on historical and projected trend for that area. And we heat our schools with diesel or heating fuel. A 5% increase to property and general liability insurance, and that's just based on trend and where we see things going in the future. What is known? The governor's budget included no new increases for K-12 education beyond what was already established in House Bill 273. So we have for Kodiak Island Borough School District, the way that this works out is House Bill 273, which was the last increase that we will see from that, will be the last part of the area cost differential, and that's going to bring $476,000 into our FY13 budget. But with the reduction of House Bill 108, which was one-time energy funding for last year, we're going to reduce our state revenue by $425,000. So those offset each other with regards to our FY13 budget. And then salary costs will increase as a result of regular movement on the salary schedule. In Kodiak,
can we ask questions?
Excuse me, if we could hold questions until you're done with the presentation. Yeah, we are, we really need to be concise here. Okay.
Okay. Go ahead. Salary costs will increase as a result of regular movement on the salary schedule, and that's just based on our retention of both certified and classified staff and their movement. We project each employee and how they move along with both our support staff and our teachers, administrators, and exempt employees. So we do that on a case-by-case individual basis and project it out. What is unknown? Whether or not those assumptions that I laid out will hold true for our budget, the outcome of collective bargaining, we're trying to negotiate a 3-year contract with our teachers union, and we will begin negotiations next month with our support staff. And level funding from KIB and the state of Alaska, the level of funding from the Kodiak Island Borough and state of Alaska will be major factors in our FY13 budget. Before you is laid out the revenue versus expense of our operating budget with on behalf and without on behalf. And on behalf is the TERS PERS on behalf relief that districts currently receive. You can see that with on behalf incorporated into our budget, we're still looking at the same deficit. That's because we book the revenue, but we also book the corresponding expense for that. So the net effect to the budget is zero. However, it does show you what a large part of our budget is on behalf, in that it's over $7 million that we're booking with it. We have total expenditures of $49 million. Without it, we're looking at $41.7 million. Those show the major, on these charts, you can also see the major pieces of our funding and where they come from, and see the majority of our funding comes from the state of Alaska. So, What is making up or contributing to the overall deficit of $3.5 million? We talked about the loss of one-time state aid through House Bill 108. We understand that local funding will be reduced. At least that's the early estimate we're getting from the borough. This current year, we utilized our Education Jobs Fund bill to help support positions in FY12. Those positions would have been reduced in FY12 if we did not have this money, but those positions were supported for one extra year, and now we are faced with cutting those positions in FY13. Last year, or this current year in FY12, we also utilized fund balance, or our reserves, one-time money. Obviously, when you spend from your savings account, it's no longer there, and so $891,000 currently supports our budget. That money is not incorporated into next year's projection. Salary increases due to movement, $316,000. Health insurance increase of 7.2%, $366,000. Increase in transfer to pupil transportation, that's $305,000. Currently, we have transfers to the pupil transportation in the current year of $200,000. Next year, we will be contributing $500,000. Increase in workers' comp, $57,000. Increase in in-kind services and property and general liability, about $40,000. Utility service increase, $82,000. And then other is about $300,000. And that's a lot of different things when you go through the budget and you're comparing it to your current. And what we do is we compare it to our current budget, which is our winter revised budget. That includes a lot of movement on the salary schedule, vacancies that exist in that budget but don't in next year, and that sort of thing. So that's our deficit. Our revenue picture looks, as the pie chart shows, the majority of it is state revenue, 70%. 21.7 is local funding. Federal kicks in 4.55%, and then other revenue, that would be E-rate revenue, indirect revenue from all of our special revenue funds. There's an indirect percentage that's set aside. That contributes some money to our budget as well. And then fees for facility use fees and student fees and that sort of thing represent other revenue. When we get to the expense side of the budget, you can see that there's about four large chunks there. Certified salaries, non-certified salaries or classified salaries, employee benefits is the largest, and then utilities at 11%. Other than that, you can see that professional technical services makes up 0.5%, travel makes up 1%, supplies 3%, transfer to other funds 2%, equipment is less than 1%, and other expenses is less than 1%. So if I show these categories by major category, you can see that salaries and benefits is the majority of our budget there, over 80%. Utilities, $4.2 million. It says discretionary accounts, and that's maybe not the best word for it, but that would be supplies, professional technical services, everything that goes into just running the classroom, the school, that sort of thing. Travel is also included in that. In-kind services of just under $1 million. Those are the costs or expenses that we share with the borough. They pay those expenses on our behalf, and they're included in our local contribution. So we pool services for audit, general liability and workers' comp, those sorts of expenses. Snow removal, it makes better sense for in the community of Kodiak for us to pool resources and enter into one contract with the borough, and then the borough pays it on our behalf and provides in-kind services for our budget, shows it as a local contribution. So that's what that is. So if we go dig deeper into employee benefits, because that is the largest cost in our budget, I wanted to specify exactly what makes up that $18 million in employee benefits. And I'm presenting the budget with on behalf in our budget. The Anchorage School District, and I believe Fairbanks as well, Mike will be able to speak to this later, but I believe they've pulled out on behalf just for presentation purposes. But at this point, Kodiak has not. Health insurance makes up $6 million of our benefits. TERS and PERS make up over $10 million, and that contributes to about $17 million worth of our $18 million benefits budget. So if we look at the total expenses by object and the history of this, the way we present our budget is we show three prior actual years, and these actual years are based on our audit. So FY09, FY10, and FY11, these are all the audited numbers. FY12 is our original budget that we passed, our beginning budget. FY12 revised is our winter revised budget, and then we have our FY13 preliminary budget. The FY12 revised budget, the reason why that's important is because schools don't know their actual funding until halfway through the year. Because we have to do our actual enrollment count in October, then once we get that, we've determined what our total state aid will be, and we incorporate that into the budget, make cuts, adjustments mid-year, and so we show both the FY12 beginning and the winter revised in relationship to the FY13 preliminary budget. As you look at these different expenses, you can see that for the first time, benefits is the highest cost factor within our budget. But you can see that just in the first three categories, certified, non-certified, and benefits, the remaining pieces of our budget don't make up a huge percent. And then you can see that utilities is the largest out of the remaining. But that gives an indicator as to where money is spent within our budget and how we're funding things.
And for the record, also, we have Representative Sissner, Representative Pruitt with us. And I think I mentioned Representative Kawasaki, but for the record, go ahead, sir.
Thank you. This is a TERS PERS history chart that shows in FY08, the first time we booked on behalf expenses within our budget. You can see that the top of the bar represents our total, the blue portion represents total on behalf, and the orange portion represents what the district has to pay, because we don't receive that set-aside funding that offsets the expense piece. So you can see that in FY13, we're projecting over $10 million in TERS PERS costs. Anchorage CPIU, the reason why I included this chart in our presentation is because this is a very real thing for us. Our pupil transportation contract is based off of the CPIU. It increases every year by 0.75% of the CPI. And the major contributing factors of the CPI are those factors that we have to deal with as a school district in a very real way. So what are those major contributing factors? We have medical, energy, all other items, market basket items that the CPI looks at, and then housing. You can see that one of the biggest noticeable things on this chart is that medical has risen so drastically in comparison to everything else, and it's represented in our budget as well. Fuel, you can see the spike that we had in 2007-2008, and those costs continue to rise. But all other items in housing continue to rise at a more steady pace, but they do continue to rise. So for our major benefits, which I'm the one piece in here that's missing on the legend, is health insurance. It's represented by the red line on the chart. You have our retirement and health insurance costs on this chart, and you can see that in FY08, the total cost of PERS TERS increased. The blue line represents the on-behalf portion. The orange line represents, again, the cost to the district. And so the cost to the district has held steady based on the states contributing the on-behalf portion. But if we look at the same chart without on-behalf taken into account, you can see that health insurance for us has taken we've taken a large increase in health insurance since FY09. Since FY09, health insurance has increased by 52% for the district. We went from just under $3 million a year in FY09 to in FY13, we're projecting just over $6 million for health insurance. This chart represents our historical utilities. You can see that communications has increased. A major reason for that is we've increased our broadband to our rural sites in our district. And what's helping with those costs is what we call E-rate funding from the Universal Service Administrative Company. And it's basically that tax you see on all of your phone and utility bills, communication bills. Those go back to funding schools and libraries and that sort of thing. So, but with regards to the other utilities, you can see that electrical and fuel for heating make up the major portion. Those have seen steady increases. Heating fuel has increased at a very high rate since FY03. And during that time, fuel has increased by 76% from about $300,000 to over $1.2 million for our district. And what's discouraging about these utility costs and benefits costs and that sort of thing is that anytime we're spending money in these categories, it's pulling away from instruction. It's taking money out of the classroom, as well as our pupil transportation funding, and requiring that we put our resources here. These are hard costs, but with regards to our entire budget of having being tasked with or charged with serving students and educating students, teachers are very hard costs as well, or real costs. Chairman Dick, that's my presentation.
Thank you. We do need to be concise. We probably have 8 minutes for questions, and then we need to move on. So, question, Representative Feige and Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple of them here. Why did the Kenai Borough reduce your funding or reduce their funding to you? I'm sorry, the Kodiak Island Borough. Saw the K here, I slipped.
Through the chair, Representative Feige, they've reduced our funding based on what. At this point, they do not have their budget set. They have not rolled out with a preliminary budget. The Assembly has set our funding at what they feel is a prudent level. They have not promised any increase above the amount that they've set that at.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chairman?
Follow up.
What are you doing to reduce insurance costs in terms of especially your facility costs and other risk management strategies?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, at this point we are, through our facilities unit, we are working to make sure that our biggest exposure with regards to workers' comp is slip, trips, and falls, making sure pathways are cleared, sanded, and safe for everyone. With regards to our health insurance costs, we are trying to produce plan design changes, but that is a negotiating item with all of our employee groups, and we're presenting those during a current collective bargaining and hopeful that some of those plan design changes will mitigate some of the costs, but to the extent that we've seen the increases, it won't have as great an effect as I would have liked.
And one more?
One more follow-up.
You mentioned that you're about to embark on negotiating a three-year contract with your teachers and other staff. If your funding cycle is on less than a three-year cycle, which essentially it's year to year, both with the borough and with the state. Why are you locking yourself into a three-year contract when you don't have any certainty at all that you'll be able to meet the terms of that contract?
Chairman Dick, through the chair, Representative Feige, at this point, what we try to do is we try, what we're attempting to do with a three-year contract is create on our expense side of a budget some measures that or assurances that we know that I guess it's for planning purposes with regards to a three-year contract. It does seem a little bit problematic in that we don't know our funding. What we're proposing at this point is no new increases to our salary schedule and plan design changes that would save us money in health insurance. But truthfully, at this point, I guess, just from a finance perspective or my own seat in the role of public education, where the pay-as-you-go approach that's been referenced does not allow us to really know exactly what we're going to receive in 1 year. So even if we were negotiating a one-year contract, we still, at this point, do not know how much money we will be receiving next year. The legislative session adjourns April 15th. After that, we are sending our budget over to the borough. We won't know that funding until the end of May. School districts are in a bit of a quandary with trying to engage in financial planning all the way around, both revenue and expense side. It's frustrating from my seat because I know that if we have the ability to engage in financial planning, we could do a lot better at serving the students that we serve by planning strategic initiatives that help ensure the sustainability of specific programs that improve education and that sort of thing. When we don't know what the funding will be from year to year, we can't ensure that any of those programs will exist from 1 year to the next, and we don't know even what the class size will look like from 1 year to the next.
Good answer. Thank Excellent answer. Touche. We have like 3 minutes, and we have five people lined up here. Representative Sisna.
I'm going to try to go fast. And spent 6 years in Kodiak myself, so spent a lot of time actually mostly looking at history, which actually is what I want to do right now, is and you've mentioned several times about state policy and the fact that you're getting your money late in terms of planning. You're getting not the money, but the knowledge of what the money is going to be late, because we have a policy of having that be one of the things we finish almost at the end of the session, which I've watched now here. The other part of this, actually there's a number of things here, but we also make money here in the state from high cost of fuel, and your community pays big time when those costs go up, right? Your community does have a windmill operation, right? And that does at least offset the price a little bit, right? And then there are some other policies that have to do with health where the state made some mistakes, and now there's big costs that are being paid for, I think, by your school because we're catching up with PERS TERS. I think that's right. So huge amounts of what you're talking about really is what we need to all be talking about here too, and that is helping you because we're a big part of what's happening in your school district. Am I right there?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna, you are correct in that we rely on state funding in a very big way. You can see that it makes up 70% of our funding. With regards to what I think you alluded to as the on behalf TERS PERS contribution, we are receiving state assistance that makes up for the expense of that. And so one of my slides was showing with on behalf and without on behalf. The net impact to the budget is zero because the state is fully funding that expense to fund the unfunded liability.
All right. Okay, Representative Wilson.
Yeah, and that was one of my points. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I would like to welcome Representative Peterson here with us today. Mm-hmm. Just so people know, on the committee, PERS Insurance pays $4.6 million to this particular school district to make up their portion of it, which is a pretty substantial amount. My question is, though, you have 9 schools that are under 50 students in each one of those. How large are those, you know, how many students were those schools supposed to hold? And do you have principals in each one of those schools?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, those schools, the maximum capacity of those schools is, I believe, just over 100 students. We have seen a decline in the population in our rural sites. They do not each have a principal. We have one point five administrators that oversee all 9 schools, or 8 schools. One is based on an itinerant basis, supports all rural schools from town and flies out to these different villages. And then there is a 0.5 principal that is at Old Harbor, which is our largest rural school. What we do to make sure that we can ensure scalability in our district, because our funding is based on students and the number of students we serve, is we have staffing formulas that have been set up that more or less ensure that when the population of a school dips below a certain point, we cut staff. And that's just to make sure that we can provide a balanced budget.
Okay, thank you, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if we're out of time, I can put the question there so that it could be answered by another district. But if we're not, that'd be great. I was wondering about the PERS-TERS history and the on behalf. I'm unsure why it's there or what the effect. I mean, I guess what we're seeing is if we had not made the change in the PERS-TERS, that $10 million cost would be on the district. Now, if we hadn't gone back and changed to the defined contribution system and taken over the anything above 22%. So is that what I'm understanding, is if we were under the old system, all those on-behalf costs would have been legally on the school district itself, and that would be a continuing deficit?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, as I understand it, the division of the Department of Administration, the Division of Retirement and Benefits, sets the actuarial rate. In years prior to FY08, that actuarial rate was not set at an amount that would have ensured more moderate payments of both the benefit and the liability that's brought about by the benefit. And at this point, we are playing catch-up. The state is funding that on behalf piece, the difference between the employer rate and the actuarial rate. Without that funding, yes, we would have to pay the entire actuarial rate. So that is definitely helping schools. However, as you can see, based on our budget and the amount that is set aside for benefits, if we were required to pay the entire actuarial rate, we would be dismantling most all of our programs.
Okay. We do need to move on.
The question I have can be to all of them.
Okay, if we could move on. Bruce Johnson, would you? Luke, thank you. I wish we had more time. We could spend an hour with you, sir. Thank you. I'm sure everybody else is now as impressed as I was when I visited Kodiak. Bruce, would you introduce the next? Okay. For the record, please introduce yourself and go on with your presentation.
I'm Laura Hilton. I'm a business manager with the Lake and Peninsula School District, and pleased to be here today. To provide you a little bit of a perspective on where we are and what our logistics are for our district, we operate 13 schools in 14 rural communities. We also operate a correspondence program that provides some choice to parents that don't wish to put their kids in the public schools. Our district encompasses an area of over 32,000 square miles, and all of our communities are small and remote and limited 10 months out of the year to access by air. We only receive year-round barge service in one community. our enrollment peaked in 1999 at just under 550 students and has been declining ever since to the level that we've been at now for about 3 years, which is 325 students. During that time, we've closed two schools that fell below the 10-student threshold for the state foundation funding. All of our schools range in size between 10 students and 75 students. And one of the questions from me earlier was, how does that affect your building sizes? For us, it's huge. We are operating schools that were built to house 75 students and now have 12 to 15 students in those. So that scale of buildings that we're maintaining and heating is not decreasing with our student population and our funding. LPSD implemented a standards-based system about 10 years ago to address student achievement in our district. And as you can see, that system has benefited our students greatly, and our test scores have been rising over that period of time. Other factors that contribute to our student success in those areas are a very focused recruiting and retention program that allows us to bring quality teachers to our students and to retain them so that students have that continuity of teachers between 1 year to the next so that they can continue to learn without having to adjust to a new group of people every year. Implementing research-based curriculum and providing targeted professional development for teachers to allow them to provide that material in the best way possible. We've also been able to provide some early literacy and preschool programs that greatly improve our students coming into kindergarten and doing testing at that third grade level. Literacy coaches, and then being able to provide some targeted tutors to help students who are falling behind. For our FY13 budget, we've assumed that the state funding will be flat, as in the governor's budget. We're also seeing, coming out of the federal monies that we receive a great deal of impact aid, $2 million roughly. And we're hearing at the federal level that the impact aid money is facing a $100 million reduction for next year in the federal budget. And for us, that means an 8 to 10% reduction in that money. The borough contribution for us is going up slightly this year because our property values in the borough doubled last year. So that affected their contribution to us. Our ICER cost factor is going up from 1.9 to 1.994. We're also in the final year of a hold harmless from closing Pedro Bay School 2 years ago, which is in effect making our state funding decrease, even though our student numbers are holding the same and other pieces of that formula for us are increasing. The hold harmless is making our number go down in the end. We're also reducing federal grant monies, and our E-rate subsidy numbers are falling from 86 to 81% this next year. Our revenue is provided from our borough. We have some local monies that come through. Our state foundation number, as I mentioned, is decreasing due to our hold harmless on closing a school. The one-time energy funding being removed, and we're expecting it decreases in our impact aid and in our E-rate funding. It brings a $356,000 reduction to our revenue numbers. Federal grant money is reducing another $870,000, and to maintain the current programs that we're operating, that would produce an $844,000 deficit in our expenditure budget for next year. Here's our expenditures that we projected for FY13 based on current maintaining current programs. and of course we're making reductions in certain areas already. One of the biggest factors that we saw in this budget was the increase in utilities. Already for this fiscal year, we've seen the average kilowatt hour charges go up by over 10 cents. We work with our utilities who have been working on getting wind power and different things. We entered into a contract with our one utility who has a hydroelectric dam to utilize excess power that's generated by the hydro facility, install electric boilers in those communities, and when there's excess power coming off a hydro project, we receive that power at about 13 cents a kilowatt hour. So we're displacing fuel by utilizing that excess. And we use it most of the year. The hydro dam doesn't keep up when the temperatures fall below a certain, because the water starts to crystallize and they can't keep up at that point. So we do run on diesel boilers for a portion of the year when it's cold. But we have spent a lot of time working with our utilities, and our schools utilize waste heat coming off of the village generation facilities so that we can, again, displace fuel usage. But all of those things are not enough to keep pace with the cost increases that we're having on the utility side. The other big factor for us is our food service program, which is greatly important to our students' success, and needing to transfer $400,000 to that program to keep that moving. The costs of that program have increased tremendously just based on the cost of fuel, which affects our cost of travel, which affects our cost to transport goods in for those programs. Our overall shortfall, you know, comes from the reduces that we're expecting in our funding, also comes from increasing costs, and the overall cost of fuel affects our entire budget in that the transportation of all of our goods and materials and operating our schools require us to fly to those locations. We're not connected by road, and therefore the increased cost of the transportation really affects every line item of our budget. The planned cost-saving measures that we are looking to implement for next year, we're exploring outsourcing our food service program to see if we can bring that cost down. We have district-wide or itinerant principals who serve multiple locations, and we're looking at reducing that number from 5 to 4. Also looking at reducing teachers from 5 1/4 FTE. The reading coaches that have been providing literacy support, reducing that from 2.5 positions to 0.5 position. Eliminating district counselors altogether. And then reducing supplies, materials, and travel and professional development costs as much as we can to bring our budget within the revenue we have. I've talked a little bit about the major impacts of the utilities on our budgets and how the increases there are just affecting all items of our budget. Our fuel prices have increased steadily for the last few years, and I just put here 3 years worth of fuel on this chart that shows you that even in that amount of time, some of our locations have doubled the cost of the fuel. And we operated with fuel prices between $1.70 and $2.10 for 20 years, and then we're now running between $3 and $8, over $8 a gallon at different locations. Mm-hmm. For us, we focus always on trimming what we can, and we've reduced administrative and maintenance positions over the last few years, and we're always working to increase our efficiency in operating our buildings and moving staff throughout our district and moving the materials and supplies. The fact remains that we just simply can't keep pace with the general inflationary costs of those services anymore without cutting into the classroom staffs and reducing educational opportunities for our kids. we strive to operate as efficiently and effectively as we can, and we try to absorb reductions outside of the instructional areas as much as possible. However, with the decreases that we're looking at for FY13, it's going to affect our instructional programs. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today and share our district information and our experiences relating to educating our students.
Representative Peterson, would your question fit here as well?
No.
Okay. Forgive me. Let's see. Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Laura, what did you use your the previous speaker said that they did use their ERA money for to keep teachers on longer, and even though the legislature said we should use it for not personnel. Did your school system use ERA funds for continuing something, or did they use it for one-time things?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, we specifically focused on other items that we could do, like purchasing new curriculums that we could implement. We did a replacement of technology items, updated our computers and our laptops in our classrooms. We did use the ERA jobs money that came through for some personnel things. We used it for the tutors that we have coming in to provide targeted work with students who are falling behind. And this year it supported part of a counselor salary.
Okay, and so for follow-up. So unfortunately, you're going to have to get rid of the tutors. You know, it's very discerning for me to see that the cuts that you're going to have to make are really going to affect the students in big ways. Are any of your negotiations up at this time, that it's time to negotiate, and when those negotiations take place, do they look at, you know, if you don't get raises, then maybe we can keep some of this stuff? Or where are you at? I mean, kind of where does that take place? And I'm hoping that all of the ones that come up will answer these questions so we don't have to answer them, ask them again.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I meant to mention where we were at with negotiations early, and I missed it. We just completed a contract with our principals for another three-year agreement, and our teachers' agreement will be up at the end of next school year. Those contracts include a 2% increase for teachers for next year and also for principals. And unfortunately, when you're talking with them and working through the negotiations, they see the impact on their paycheck. And so unfortunately, some of the conversations haven't been what you would hope that they would be, that we can keep more of you if we don't do some of the increases. One of the things that we have done is we've been working with our health insurance over the last year, and through our broker and with our third-party administrator, and we have implemented new networks for hospitals and providers under our health insurance. And for the renewal that started January 1, 2012, we took almost no increase over the prior year. But that was through taking advantage of provider networks and making some changes to the plan. And as we go into teacher negotiations for this next year, we're going to be looking at health insurance very heavily again, and it as it is tied to the negotiated agreements as well.
Just one more thing, that's it.
Hold on.
I guess this is different for every school system, so when the teachers automatically go up one step or over one side, is there a percentage that increase does? So they already get a percent, but I don't know what that is for each school district, so it's different.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, for us, the increase on a step would be 2% from this year to next year. And that, it doesn't always run exactly like that because people change positions. They are placed at different places on the salary scale. So it's hard to say that the increase or decrease is one thing or the other, but the general increase on the salary schedule would be 2%.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Representative Sisner, Representative Valle, and Representative Munoz. Representative Sisner.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I've actually got two questions. One is an answer that you may not know, but somebody else in the room may know, and the other is I think maybe you can answer. And the first is whether or not, this is a question about actually probably legal, it's possible to use our schools for like rent out sections, that kind of thing, because what I've seen in many of the communities I've been to is that the population is going down, and suddenly you wind up having these massive schools with a small classroom that's operational. You've got to keep that building going, and there is a huge cost there. You wind up with the clinic in that community, and this is true in many places in the state, having a devil of a time trying to keep their utilities up. So some of these communities in winters like this one, where you have enormous costs, are trying to figure out which building do you keep going, because the costs are so high. There's really choices being made on in terms of what buildings, what public buildings do you keep open. That's one question. The other question, and so I'd love to have you answer whether or not renting out space in that school could maybe actually bring costs down, make it work for everybody. Second question is, in your school district, what are the resources that are brought to the state and to the private sector? Because you're talking about your revenue coming up in the area, and that sounds to me like something's happening, some good development is happening that's bringing in money, and your school is creating some of that by being there and providing workforce. So thank you.
First up, Representative Sisney, your first question was an excellent question. That was well put. I think that's one of our answers. Go ahead.
Through the chair, Representative Sitna, we at this point don't rent out space in our schools. Our communities are so small that often the services that come through, they do have small health clinics, but the services that go through our communities are often itinerant in nature. And some of those providers utilize our schools sort of on a, you know, I guess, in-kind basis. The dental teams often will set up in a portion of the school and work there because the clinic's not large enough for them. Currently, we're not charging them for those services as a community function that comes in. And as far as business development thing in our communities, they're small enough that there's often not even a city office, but maybe a tribal office. Some of our communities have city offices. We just haven't combined on that level with our communities. One of the things that we do is we do lease our teacher housing on long-term basis for uses for community projects. So they're installing the wind generation systems in our village at Pocanoc. And those contractors leased one of our empty teacher housing units for the period of that. So we are doing it on the teacher housing level, but not as much on the school building level itself. What we're sharing there, we're doing more on an in-kind basis. Your second question about,
resources.
Okay, the resources. Our borough valuation virtually doubled from FY10 to FY11. And as I understand it, in conversations with our borough manager, he feels that that was a result of things like the HUD housing projects that have been developed in our region over the last couple of years, and that those development of those types of things at this point are catching up in the valuation, that maybe it should have gone up the last time and just missed a year. And so instead of steadily increasing over a few years, those projects have caught up all at once. We do have the mine being considered and working in our area, but at this point, without it being permitted or, you know, development really moving forward yet, he didn't feel that that was affecting the valuation so much at this point.
Thank you, Representative Foggy. Excuse me, did you have a follow-up?
Very quickly, fisheries. Is fisheries something that happens in your district's area?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Sitna. Yes, our borough does levy fish tax to a number of our communities, and they operate based on fish tax, and some of the funding that comes to us is directly from the revenue they collect on fish tax.
Thank you. Representative Foggy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quick question on hydro plant. Where is it?
Through the chair, Representative Feige. The hydro plant is located out of Iliamna.
And I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah. It's
The other question I have is, and you may not be aware of this, but there's an effort in Congress right now to do away with the bypass mail program. What effect would doing away with that program have on your district?
Through the chair, Representative Feige. We're very aware of the bypass mail issues and the postal issues that have been coming up because we had post offices that were slated to be closed on the list here this last year. Bypass mail would have a huge impact on our food service program. Virtually all of the dry goods and even some of the freeze that is shipped through to our food service operations come through bypass mail. We do things like we combine all of our orders into large orders, our general supplies, technology supplies, janitorial goods. We do it all at once, combine a large order to try and get some economy of scale on those orders, and then we utilize the bypass mail on as much of that stuff as can be shipped through the mail.
Thank you. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. You're showing on page 4 a shortfall of $844,000 for FY13. Does that include the planned cost savings that you're projecting?
Yes.
It does. Okay. And so what would the, from your estimation, what would the BSA have to be in order for you to come close to balancing?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz. You know, we did some work earlier this year, our Alaska Association of Business Officials did, and put forth a statewide number of, I believe it was $320. And honestly, for our budget, you plug that number in, it comes really close.
320, okay. And that's for 1 year, per year, right? Okay, and then ask another question? Mm-hmm. What is the average beginning salary with benefits for an average teacher coming on and then a mid-career average in your district?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz. Our base teacher salary starting at BA0 is $42,000. When you add benefits to that, it's depending upon whether they're a family benefit or not. Usually if it's a single teacher, they're running up to like $70,000-$75,000 with the benefits. The mid-range people are in the $55,000-$60,000 range, and then depending on their benefits, it's averaging, you know, up to $100,000 for their salary and benefits.
And then just one more specific question on page 5, $791,000 for transfers. What are transfers?
It's money that's going into other funds like food service.
Okay.
That's being used to offset the shortfall in those categories.
Okay. And then another mm-hmm. follow-up. Do you pay your board members?
Sorry, through the chair, Representative Munoz. Our board members receive a $100 stipend for attending a board meeting, and their per diem rate, I'm not positive what it's at. I believe maybe it's about $90. So they get about $190 for attending a board meeting.
Okay. Representative Wilson, then we do need to move on.
Two short things. One is, could you get to us how much it's taking to operate each one of your schools, since each one of them is underneath, I'm sure, at least in half of what it takes to, I mean, I did most of them, you got like 38, 20 children in some of these schools that have capacity of 100. So it'd be nice to know how much it takes for each one of those schools, just a round number, the heat. Just do what you'd have to do no matter how many children you'd have.
Okay.
And the other part is what Representative Dick wanted me to do this morning. Just a reminder on the BSA that for every district, it's not the same. So if it raises $100, in Anchorage, it is pretty much $100. But as we get out into more of the rural communities, that number changes. So that 320 that you said that all the superintendents got together, or what would that be? What would that mean to your districts precisely? It would be more than 320. If you could just get that back to us.
I can get that back to you. I don't have that in my head today.
It's a huge multiplier with that in special education. But for us, we hear the one number, but it means something different in absolutely every district in this state, and would help us to understand what that number would do to your budget at that point. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next is David Arp for Sitka School District. David, if you please come forward, identify yourself for the record.
Chairs on wheels. My name is David Arp. I'm the business manager for the Sitka School District. When we originally were told about this presentation, I was informed we'd only have about 10 minutes. I do actually have some budget packets I brought with me if the representatives would like to see more detailed information on our budget. I'd be happy to hand these out as well so they can review them while I'm going through my presentation. And if they want to ask any other questions based on those, they can sure do so. I have them here. I also put together a one-page summary of our budget that you should have with my slideshow presentation. Over the years of doing financial statements, I've learned that when you give people a stack of financial papers, they flip through them all just to find the bottom line when they get to it. So I decided to just try to summarize everything from kind of a bird's eye view on that front page. I also gave you a statistical highlight section. The Sitka School District is located fully within the city and borough of Sitka. Our major industries are commercial fishing, tourism, healthcare, education, and government agencies. One of our challenges is we're not on the road system, but in the flip side, it's actually kind of a fun place to live, too, because we get to ride the ferry and everything else. Our population is 8,800. Another challenge we've been facing, that's been basically flat since 2000. This year, we actually bumped up about six students. We're at 1,306 full-time students. The district employs about 200 full-time employees. And we have five schools. They're all based on the island. We also have a homeschool program that's based out of one of our elementary schools. Unlike some of the other districts that are representing here today, we're very fortunate because our districts are all centrally all of our schools are centrally located. And it makes it a lot easier for facility and personnel management. All right, moving on to the money here. We really appreciate you guys taking the time to meet with us today because, as has been said before, and as one of our primary points is, you are our major fundraisers, or our funding sources. One of the questions was asked about whether or not we could charge for school rentals. And we explore other alternative sources of funding as much as we possibly can. The hard part is when you live in a smaller community and you're using public dollars to create these facilities, charging your local citizens to use them is kind of a tough thing to do. We do have a pool in our community, and so we actually charge for using that. But even what we charge there is nowhere near the cost of maintaining the heating of that pool alone. So one of the nice things is we just realized one of our counterparts up in Northwest Arctic informed us about the education tax credit. And so in Sitka, we're actually trying to pursue some of that and see if there's any value with our local businesses to see if there's any value we can be getting out of that tax credit for us. As you can see, our two major issues in our funding sources right now are coming from a reduction in our state funding, partly due to we're expecting about 11 student decline in our enrollment, about a 3 intensive need student decline. Some of that is offset by the increase in the ICER. We're moving from, I think it's like 17.5% to 19%. Don't quote me on the exact numbers there. I apologize. I don't have that in front of me. The other decrease is really the one-time House Bill 108 energy funding. It kind of gave us an inflated number for 2012, and that's coming out in 2013, since we haven't had any indication that we're going to get one-time funding or increases to the BSA. Neither of those are included in our state funding at this time. Our local funding, it's kind of an uncertainty right now, but we're anticipating the city will hold us flat. Keeping our fingers crossed is a better way to phrase it, but we're pretty confident they'll at least hold us at the flat level. But our biggest issue we're dealing with in Sitka and in the Southeast is the loss of the Secure Rural Schools and Community, I want to make sure I get this right, Self-Determination Act funding. Many people know this as the timber receipts dollars. Over the years, it's been worth about $18.5 million to the state of Alaska. In 2008, when President Bush was trying to get, and Congress were trying to get ARRA passed, one of the sweeteners of the deal was a reauthorization of this bill. We were fortunate enough that they did reauthorize it. It was on a sliding scale, so you can kind of see in our federal funding the ramp down of it. That was the sliding scale. This current year, FY12, is the last year of that funding. So the $18.5 million is currently slated to leave the state. For my community, that's worth about $1 million, and I split that equally with my city, so that's about $500,000 hit to my budget right now. I know there's other school districts and communities in the state that are going to be hit way worse than we are by this funding going away, too. So overall, we're looking at about about $850,000 decrease in revenues for the year. Pictorially, it's not really exciting. It's like a huge chunk of 70% of state funding, which is kind of what you hear from everybody else, 30% of local funding, and 0.17% federal funding. When Laura mentioned that Impact Aid is getting cut, my 0.17 is the $30,000 I see each year from Impact Aid, and it sounds like that's getting cut too. So that's not good news. It's also one of the reasons why we do like to come here, because really you are our two main, we do this presentation for our city next week, you are our two real funding sources. So, in a personnel-driven industry like education, it should be no surprise 81% of my expenses go to employee costs. So what we do is we try to break them out to show our employee costs separately. What you're seeing for 2013, we actually are still under contract for 2013. We will be renegotiating our contract this winter. This coming winter. To answer, I believe it was Representative Wilson's question about considering funding with negotiation salaries. It's a double-edged sword when you're considering it in negotiations. One is you want to pay your employees enough to make them want to continue working in your district and keep it competitive, not only with the other educational institutions in the state, but also the other industries in the state. So we do try. One of the things that we're fortunate enough in Sitka is our teachers union and our classified union are both very understanding of our budget. And so I don't believe we've had more than a 3% increase in our salaries in the past several years. So we try to keep that really under control, and they work pretty hard with us to do that as well. So what you're seeing here is the increases in the teachers' pay, the admin pay, and classified pay. Underneath that, you have the benefits. We have the first time in a long time that we actually have flat increase assumed in our insurance rates. So we're pretty excited about that. We're coming off of a 20% increase this past year. One of the things we do with our city is we have a joint insurance sharing with our community and our local community hospital. And allows us to have a little more buying capacity in Sitka to help that. But even that, you're still just dealing with the market. Having to fly people out, chopper people out for medevacs and things like that, it's really expensive. You have one of those a year, and it pretty well crushes your insurance rates. One of the biggest expenditures we've seen is in our classifieds increases is over the past 5 years has been about a 22% increase in our classified staff. That's where our paraprofessionals are accounted for. If you understand the intensive needs funding factor, which thank you all very much for all the work you've done on increasing that over the years, getting that up to the level of 13 has given us pretty much for the first time where we're right around a break-even level, what we feel is a break-even level on what it costs us to provide education to an intensive needs student in the district. So we do want to put out a thank you for that. But what you're seeing here is in Sitka over the past 10 years, we've increased our intensive need count from 15 students to 37. So our keeping the one-to-one ratio is what's really making up that increase that you're seeing there. Overall, our total of employee costs are expected to go up about $324,000. It's about a 2.2% increase over FY12. Pictorially, teachers make up half of our budget. Benefits make up a little more than a quarter of it, and we use the rest to pay everybody else. And the $3.5 million non-employee expense budget, about half of that goes to utilities. So under maintenance, that's where our fuel and electrical costs. We are fortunate enough in Sitka to have a hydroelectric plant, and in the past we've not seen any rate increases. And I don't want to, don't quote me on this, but I want to say it's been like 5 to 10 years since we've seen a rate increase. We're going to see our first one in a very long time because our hydroelectric can no longer keep up, the capacity of our hydroelectric can no longer keep up with the demand of our community, so they're having to fire the oil generators at this stage. So we're looking at a 10 to 15% increase in our electric rates for the next year. The other one is our ARRA funds. When we received them, we decided to use it all for technology. Our technology was woefully outdated and very inconsistent across the district. So we used our about $1 million in our state fiscal stabilization money to really revamp our entire technology infrastructure and educational resources district-wide. Now, the hard part that comes with revamping all of your technology is you have ongoing maintenance costs. So what you're seeing here is our board decided, we all sat down with our board, and we built a five-year strategic plan to implement all of the new technology and to get our budget up to a level where we can manage it. I believe we're going to have about one more year of incremental increases, and we should be right around the $500,000 range, and that's what we feel it's going to take to manage the computer refresh cycles, the increased cost of the bandwidth, things like that. So all told, our non-employee expenses are actually anticipated to drop by about $42,000 or about 1.2% from the previous year. Graphically, as you can see, there's our utilities making up 47%. Our school and program supply budgets make up about 19%. Programs being like special education, our cultural native education program. District administration, which is like our legal fees, our telephone costs, things like that, make up 13%. You can see the 12% for technology. Professional technical contract services, 4%. We do fund a very minor part of our student activities. There's about $500,000 worth of student activities at our high school level each year. Most of that money comes from donations from the community. Very little of it comes out of our actual operating budget. I think it's to the tune of $100,000, somewhere in that range. And then the school board and our transfers make up about 1% of the $3.5 million non-employee expenditure budget. And to answer one of the questions that was asked earlier, our board members are all volunteer and there is no compensation made to any of them, and they put in a lot of time. Put it all together, and this is what it looks like: 81% in salary and benefits, 9% in maintenance, and once you pay for your employees and your gas, the rest is what you have left to pay for everything else. So, in summary, the revenues we're looking at is about $17.18 million. Our total expenditures, if we roll all of our employees over into the new negotiated agreements, and we include the increased costs for fuel, we're looking at about $18.4 million. Leaving us with a $1.29 million deficit at this stage. You can see our fund balance, which is our reserves right now. We're pretty proud of this number. About 6 years ago, our reserves were sitting at about $350,000. And we realized that we're going to have some tough times coming up, so we've worked very hard to get this number here. We do anticipate taking approximately $500,000 out of our reserves to help soften some of this blow. The equivalent to this, if we were to take out the equivalent in teachers, it would equate to about 14 teachers out of our 105 teacher staff. This isn't the end of our process. This is actually just the beginning. We don't have the ability to tell you right now where our cuts are actually going to come from, because this is what we present to our community and our stakeholders, and then we in turn ask them, tell us what you value, what you hold in the highest regard, and then we go sit down at a work session and determine where we're going to make our final cuts and try to hit everything as appropriately as possible. Finally, this is the kind of a condensed version of the one-page sheet I handed out, and I really think it tells the Sitka story about as well as I can verbally. We're looking at about 11 student decrease in enrollment, and that's not enough to cut a classroom teacher. I mean, we don't have really any class sizes that are 10 kids or smaller. You look at our expenditures, $282,000 increase in expenditures, that's about a 1.6% increase over the previous year. When you consider inflation went up about 3.3% in 2011, and forecasts are all saying about 2%, 2.5% for 2012. I think we're doing a pretty good job managing our expenditures. So our real hole is in that revenue side. We have an equal number of students coming into the new year, and we're expecting to try and provide them the same amount of service, and we're trying to figure out how we're going to do it with $850,000 in less revenue. In conclusion, I think I answered all the questions. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Sisna asked about the PERS, TERS, and the on behalf. I did want to make a note that the on behalf money went to help cover the unfunded liability that exists out there, and it didn't fully cover that. I believe the last number I heard was like $11 billion, something to that effect. We actually pay for every one of our classified employees in PERS, 22% for every dollar that we pay them in salary, we have to pay into PERS. And it's somewhere around the 8% mark is what they actually see in their retirement account. So the difference between that number and the 22% number all goes to help with that unfunded liability that exists out there. For TERS, it's like 12.65% is what we pay for every employee. So, and again, they get about somewhere around the 8% mark going into their retirement accounts. In conclusion, we just can't thank you guys enough for everything you've done for us, for our community, all the work you put in, and the foundation formula and everything else. And I'll ask for any questions at this stage.
Yeah. Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On each of, I think it was on each of the presentations we've gotten so far, what I've been hearing is expenditures on communications in your programs. And it's really wonderful to see people in, to see your faces when you're making presentations here. And one of the things that I really am concerned about is the fact that we have not seen people's faces many times when we're getting the story that is usually traumatic. I mean, there's trauma out there that's been going on as we have these oil costs that go up and down and up and down and really taking away from our citizens. And it's not just the schools, but it's also the people in every one of those communities that are paying huge amounts of money. And that brings more costs that you don't mention. Kids arriving without the kinds of things that they need and coming from homes where people are cold in this very hard time. So what I want to know about that communications is how much are you in your community, you've upgraded your communications, how is that helping in terms of getting the community together, being part of this educational program, but also getting the students out there and actually growing in their knowledge and their ability to take on the future? And do you ever make use that communication, the video kind of portion, to talk with other districts that may be dealing with some same problems that you are, and actually doing what we eventually, hopefully in this body, will do and be able to have you on screen here in this room and not have paid the cost that it came to give here? So there's several questions there. What it does for your students, what it does for you between schools, and what it does for you and the state and you to keep your costs lower because you don't have to travel here to actually have us see you and for you to be really able to tell us the real story. Thank you.
Through the Chairman, Dick, Representative Sisna, we have about 25 megs of fiber optic broadband that we just brought into the district. That probably doesn't mean much to you, but it costs us about $45,000 a year to have that. We're actually we're overusing that right now, so we're looking at increasing it by 5 to 10 more megs. Every time we increase it by 5, it's another $7,500. So we need that bandwidth to do things like Skype and teleconferencing, things that are video conferencing. It's a relatively new feature for us. One of the cool things that we've done with it is started Skyping interviews, so we can actually see the employees we're talking about hiring for the first time. We're doing a lot more of the kind of online community kind of scenarios where that works out. For our students, I think one of the coolest things I can say is when I was in high school and they wanted to talk about Europe, they pulled out a map. Right now they put on Google Earth, and kids can actually virtually walk through Europe where they want to go. And having that access at your doorstep is pretty spectacular, but that does come with the cost of having the bandwidth on the island, or having the bandwidth throughout the island. So, and I'm sorry, your third question, could you repeat, please?
Was lowering your travel costs, and you did talk about that with the interviews with the teachers, but you come here, we could be having the conversation with all of us and more schools all in this room. We could have a lot happening.
Through the chair, Representative Sisna. I never think anything replaces face-to-face communication. I don't care how advanced technology gets. But it definitely will help with the costs. A ticket here from Sitka is probably the cheapest we can get, and it's like $300 or $300, $400 to get from Sitka to here. To go either to Anchorage or down south, it's using the range of $600 from to Anchorage. So anytime we can do things like teleconferencing or video conferencing or things like that, it definitely does save us money. But we do try to keep our travel costs very minimal. So.
Thank you. Representative Wilson?
Thank you. Thank you, David, for coming up. It makes me proud when you when you give how good that you're really, you know, working with your money. Has your property values gone up or down so that you can take advantage of the schools across the state, that when the property values in the town go up, then they don't have to pay as much of the mill rate? Do you know how that affects? Because I know Lake and Penn mentioned that their property values had doubled, which means that the state will now be paying more of that mill rate. So I was just wondering where Sitka was at with that.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. When the property values do increase, the foundation formula does have a factor in it that causes the local contribution to rise kind of with it. So in that indirect perspective, we do see the value. The way our community works with the city funding is they do fund us above the minimum required. They don't quite fund us to the cap. But it's more of a negotiated process every year. So the property valuations, the sales taxes, revenues, all that stuff, it all factors into whether or not we get increases or decreases. But a lot of it comes down to the political negotiating every year with our community to try and you know, get the funding to where it is. Our community has been faced with declining revenues as well over the past several years. Even though property valuations have been going up, our revenues have been declining at the city level. So we've had a pretty large decrease in tourism dollars in the southeast, so, or at least in Sitka, I should say.
Thank you. Representative Pruitt?
Just something that kind of stood out to me. Sounds like you have expensive volunteers. Help me understand why in 1 year your school board budget there, it almost doubled, about a 20,000 increase.
When you say it doubled, I think it's fair to note that it doubled from like 37 to 57.
Right, for volunteers.
In the school board accounting scenario, like every time we hire someone, we put out ads, whenever we have to hire the media to come in, typically they're billed there. So a good chunk of our funding goes there. It actually went up by about $10,000 this year because we bought all new laptops for our school board member to try to go paperless. And so when you're seeing that dollar amount going up, we've also increased, we're sending our school board president, Juan Harrison, out to Washington to lobby on behalf of the timber receipts funding, so there's some travel dollars in there too. And you can see that in the next coming year, we've actually knocked it down by $10,000 because we don't anticipate buying the computers again. But unfortunately, the travel costs to come here to talk to you all and the travel costs to send them off to Washington, D.C. continue going higher. But they don't get a per diem rate or anything. That we do pay their travel costs. I would feel horrible asking them to pay their own hotel and airfare to come out here to see you all on our behalf.
Yeah, I understand that. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What is your average class size?
I don't have that. Can I get back to you on the statistic? I'm sorry, through the chair.
No problem.
Representative Wilson, may I get back to you on that statistic?
Yeah, I appreciate that because, you know, I just took the number of students in each one of your schools by how many teachers you have, but I know some special education teachers could throw that off. But right now, it by these numbers, it's anywhere from 6 children per teacher to 14. which is pretty low, but like I said, you don't have all those numbers in there.
If you divided our entire classified staff into our student body number, it's about a little more than 11 to 1 student-to-teacher ratio.
And so with this, is that an option that you have instead of reducing 14 teachers, changing the class size? And what would that...
I'm sorry, I got to hear the question.
You were talking about this reduction would be about 14 teachers. If you're down to 11 students to one, I know my school district would be really thrilled with that, with those numbers. What would that come out? Would it be like 15 to 1, 18 to 1? Have you looked at that possibility?
Through the chair to Representative Wilson, I would have to do the math real quick on what dropping that. So it would be 90 divided by 13.
Well, if you could just get back to me on how that would work out, because I know each school would not necessarily work out the same way. Just like you said, with 11 students, they don't all come out of one class. They come throughout those. But you can get back to us.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do know that SITCA has a lot of intensive needs students, and that makes a big difference, too.
Right.
They have quite a few intensive needs students.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, if I were to take all of it, it would increase my student-teacher ratio to 14 to 1.
Okay.
But that said, you're right. That's not breaking it out for phys ed teachers, librarians, counselors, special education teachers. And we do have 37, so about 2.8% of our total population is intensive needs students right now.
So can you just get back more specifically with those?
With the
we don't want to give the numbers out wrong.
Okay.
Thank you, David. Final presenter is Mike Fisher with the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. And I understand Representative Seaton has to leave us. Thank you. Mike, please introduce yourself for the record and begin your presentation.
Good morning. I'm Mike Fisher, the Chief Financial Officer with the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. And again, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to present this today, too, also. A couple stats about the Fairbanks School District before, as I get started here. We encompass about 7,361 square miles. We have a borough population of about 98,660 in the borough. A school enrollment of about 14,300 and about 35
schools. Our schools range from anywhere from an elementary of 88 students to a high school of about 1,200. And most importantly, as we say, it's a dry cold up there. So. My first screen, now I know you expected to see a screen full of numbers from a business official, but maybe not in this format. This is the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District at a glance. It has some very important numbers here. In fact, they're the reason that I'm here today. And I'd like to talk about a few of them. The first one is a 3.9%. The 3.9% is our dropout rate in 2011. Our dropout rate has gone down from 7.3% in 2005 down to 3.9% in 2011. In fact, for students under 16 years old, our dropout rate is 0.6%. We're very proud of that statistic. Our four-year cumulative graduation rate, 71.1%. It's increased from 54.4% over the last 4 years. Again, a success that we're proud of. And actually, I have a number with no dollar signs at all, if you can believe it. 75.5%, it's our five-year cumulative graduation rate. For those students that didn't quite make it, we encourage them to come back and get their degree. You know, we take a hit on the published four-year graduation rate, but, you know, we encourage them and we'll put the time and energy and resources for them to get the degree in that fifth year. You know, it's what's right for kids. 92.8%, it's our average daily attendance rate for all students in 2010-11. 90%, it's our average daily attendance rate for classes of the 2011 graduating seniors. 2.9, the average cumulative GPA for the class of 2011 graduating seniors. 44, the number of different cultural and language backgrounds we serve. 80%, the class of 2011 seniors who rated the overall quality of their education at their school as good or very good. 90%, parents satisfied with the quality of their elementary child's education in language arts. 86% parents satisfied with the quality of their elementary child's education in mathematics. 54% teachers who have at least a master's degree. And 25% teachers who have achieved national board certification. So this is kind of a different approach to, you can see where our dollars are going. And I actually have a slide with no numbers at all. District students scored at or above the national average in reading, language, math, science, and social studies on the Terra Nova National Standardized Test. District students yield higher average results on the SAT and the AC exams than students in the state and in the nation. And again, we're proud of those successes, and in part those successes are a result of innovative programs and schools of choice. Some of the programs and schools of choice we offer in Fairbanks include the Lathrop High Engineering Academy, Hutchison High Construction Academy, James T. Hutchison Career Technical High School, which is partnered with UAA, Barnett K-8 Magnet School and its enrichment choices, Chinook Montessori Charter School, a K-8 school, Effie Cochrane Early College Charter School, a 9-12 school, Star of the North Secondary Charter School, 7-12 and somewhat focuses on credit recovery, Watershed Charter School, a K-8 place-based charter school, Building Educational Success Together. It's our best of our district correspondence program. And Students Making a Right Turn, our SMART program, which provides academic and transitional services to those students with maybe discipline issues, either expulsions or suspensions. Our successes, though, require support from many sources. Everybody has to do their part. Our 2012-13 proposed budget, and this is after our budget cuts, which we'll be talking about here in a minute, about $216 million, or about $217 million when you look at all funds. Our operating fund will be $180 million, about 83% of all funds. Very important to the core mission of what we do in the state funding. It's here. The transportation fund, again, an important part of the overall educational experience service we provide our kids. Transportation will be over $12 million. The state funding is about $10 million. So right now, this next year, we'll be subsidizing over $2 million out of the operating fund, out of classroom dollars. It's a very important piece. Nutrition services, a $6 million budget. Now, about half of this comes from charges for services, about half from the federal breakfast and lunch program, except for about $400,000 as a subsidy out of the operating fund. We have school activity fundraising, about over $2 million. This is in addition to what we get a little bit out of the operating fund, but this is basically donations, sales, vending, contributions, all the fundraising type activities. So again, our community also contributes to the educational experience of our students. And also the local, state, federal grants, over $16 million. And again, most of that's in the federal grants, most of that's in Title I and Title VI-B type funds, entitlement funds. A quick comment about the TERS and PERV on behalf payments and the unfunded liability. As mentioned earlier, we have chosen not to show the on behalf payments in our budget documents next year. We're kind of following Anchorage School District, Anchorage Municipality. In fact, our own local government does not show them either. And it's not to minimize the appreciation and importance of those dollars. They're huge dollars. You know, it's a big liability. It'd be devastating if school districts had to pay even a portion more of the on behalf payments. In the current year, that value in Fairbanks is $25 million, and next year it will be close to $35 million just for the on behalf payment. You know, we continue to make our contribution out of our foundation dollars on the same ratio everybody else does, but you can talk your, you know, you're blue in the face and you can't explain how we'll be cutting $12 million out of a maintenance level budget, but our state revenue is going up $2 million if you include it in the budget process. You know, the on behalf is kind of past service costs. It's an unfunded liability issue. It doesn't impact our daily operations. And again, it's very confusing to the community if you try to roll that all together and explain it all at once. So our continued successes will take both increased and sustained funding. Unfortunately, our 2012-13 proposed budget is based on what we know, which is flat funding. We'll continue to do the best we can to offer a comprehensive educational experience to our students, but it will not be the same experience offered in 2011-12, and the same successes may not be realized. And why? Because, like many here, we're facing substantial budget shortfalls. When we talk about our looming budget shortfall, our 11-12 operating fund budget is about $180.9 million. Our maintenance of level services budget for 2012-13 is close to $192.4 million. That's an $11.5 million increase. When we look at our revenue assumptions, we're, like many of the others, we're assuming a flat local funding, no increase to the base student allocation, a loss of the one-time state energy funding, flat federal funding. We are expecting a small increase in enrollment, maybe 50 students, and we also we know we have the final adjustment to the district cost factors, where we'll be at 7% when it's all said and done, and this is the final little bump we get there. But based on those revenue assumptions, our projected revenue for 2012-13 is $180.1 million. Compared to the 192 maintenance level services budget, we are looking at a $12.3 million projected budget shortfall. And so the obvious question is, well, what is a maintenance level budget and why is it so high? And I'll say our maintenance level budget increases this year probably twice what they normally are. We have the standard type inflationary pressures. There are about three things that impact it a lot for next year, but they are what they are. And so we have your typical salary, wage, health, and other benefit cost increases for over 1,740 positions and $105 million payroll. So that's over $4 million cost increases. We have inflationary pressures on energy and utilities, supplies, materials, maintenance, and other service contracts. And this is probably conservatively estimated at $800,000 here. And I underlined energy and utilities. You know, that's a big issue in Fairbanks. So the cost of energy and utilities is high. We just came off of January, one of the coldest on record. And in Fairbanks, we pray for global warming, but we budget for heat here. So, one of the other maintenance level increases, absorbing the cost of the 22 one-time funded jobs bill teachers. We were very careful with the initial stabilization money that received, the federal money received, and we did not put staffing and programs on there that we could not sustain. So the jobs bill funding that was awarded last year is kind of unique. I mean, the specific purpose of that basically was to rehire, retain basically classroom teachers or classroom support. And we did not go out and hire 22 teachers with this money. We had 22 teachers that were existing in our classrooms, had been there for a while. We just, instead of charging to the operating fund in the current year, we charged them to the grant for 1 year. We knew this would create an issue by design. That jobs bill would create issues this year, and I say it wasn't. We wrote about it in our transmittal letter last year, what we were doing and how it just basically defers the budget problem 1 year when you have one-time money like this. But that's over $2 million. And again, they were not new teachers; they're existing staff. We're adding over 23 special education specialists, including school psychs, occupational therapists, physical therapists, speech paths, teachers, aides to meet mandated level of services. Again, when we talk about a maintenance level budget, it's basically, well, if you're doing next year the same thing you're doing this year, what would it cost you? But also, if your mandated level of services go up, what are those increases? We're kind of a hub for intensive need children in the interior, and we also have a reputation of doing a pretty good job, and so the military looks at us a lot when they're making families, when they're making decisions. So we have a substantial increase, not necessarily in the overall special education children, but an increase in intensive need children and an increase in actual level of services within the individual IEPs. And so, this is dealing up, trying to deal up the workload issues and meet those needs, and this is next year, but we're in the process of trying to hire these folks this year too, because these are tough to fill positions. And but that's over $2.3 million. Most people have talked on the increased subsidy to pupil transportation. again, a very important piece of the educational experience and, you know, transporting your kids to school. We will be subsidized. The actual subsidy will be over $2 million, but the increase for next year about $1 million, and that's because in the current year we're using the last of any fund balance that's in the Pupil Transportation Fund. So transportation funding is a big issue for us. And also the purchase of social studies and career technical curriculum materials deferred from the current year. You know, we have a number of curriculum areas that we review on a six-year cycle. Review the curriculum and then and look at and see if new materials are needed. In the current year, we deferred that. And actually, and again, it's one of those things, we've actually slid the whole cycle back 1 year. So materials we're reviewing and we'll probably be purchasing are in their seventh year now to look at, and so but that again, that just deferred a budget problem 1 year till next year. So in total, the maintenance level budget increases of $11.5 million. And you can see that the greens are kind of the typical ones we look at. The blue ones are a little not so typical, but they are for next year. We compare that to projected revenue then, funding sources. When we look at local funding, about $48.5 million. We're projecting flat funding, you know, down $29,000, so pretty flat. Most of that is the local contribution to education. I'll follow up. We actually know that the foundation funding basically says as your property values in your community go up, the ability of the local community to fund education goes up, and therefore state revenues actually decrease in the foundation formula as your property values go up. Now, the property values at the foundation funding, it's the true and full value, so it doesn't may or may not exactly equate with what your own assessors and your own local governments use, but we get the number from the state, and it also lags a year. The numbers that that we're using for funding is last January's numbers, January of 2011. That was the first time in our community where that property value since I've been there for 20 years has actually gone down. So the full and true value number from the state assessor. So we're anticipating flat funding, hoping for flat funding from our local government. The federal funding, we're at almost $14 million of federal impact aid. It's a big number. We're anticipating for next year anyway, because again, the way the federal application of funding works, we know it'll be decreasing in the near future, but we're looking at flat funding for next year, down $28,000. In our district, that's mostly the military dependents that generate that funding. And as you folks know, with the federal impact aid funding, the state is allowed to take that into account when they compute our foundation funding from the state. So in Fairbanks, we receive about $7.5 million less in foundation funding because of the level of federal support we get. So the use of fund balance in the current year, we're using about $2 million out of fund balance. Again, we're hoping to have $1,850,000 at the end of this year to help balance for next year's budget. And I say hoping because our audited fund balance number at June 30, 2011 was zero. And so we're working on the assumption that we have some categorical increased funding. We have some underutilized. We had reserve teaching positions we didn't utilize in our budget. So it's one of those things that we'll continue to monitor this. We may or may not have it by the end of this year. So we'll have to adjust something. Right now, we're anticipating $1,850,000. But again, I'll touch on it. We're self-insured for health insurance, and so we have to monitor those numbers carefully. So we're not locked in the premium payments. So our level, some high dollar claims or just the level of activity can impact us a lot. And again, we just came out of January, one of the coldest Januaries on record, and we haven't hit those utility bills haven't hit us yet. So again, it's a number I have to keep my eye on. And state funding. We're at about $116.5 million in the current year, projecting $115.8 next year, a decrease of $566,000. But that doesn't really tell all the story about state revenues, we know. When I look at changes in state funding, again, we're assuming in our proposed budget, which is before the school board right now, a zero increase to the base student allocation and a loss of the one-time energy funding, which is actually a decrease of over $2.1 million. We're fortunate, like I said, we have that we would have more of a loss in state funding, except we are counting on somewhat of an enrollment change, some categorical SPED support, and that last increment of the district cost factors, and then a little bit of other state revenue and quality schools initiative. So total, again, at a budget our size, very flat funding, $180 million in the current year, $180 million next year, net decrease about $854,000 is all. But so you look at that, reduced revenues of the $800,000, increased costs 11.5, and there's our looming shortfall of $12.3 million for next year. Now, we do not expect the state or anyone funding body to make up the make the shortfall go away. There will be adjustment to a more sustainable level of service. There will be cuts. They will impact all areas, including the classroom. But a reasonable and a permanent increase to state funding is justified and a necessary to continue the successes gained over the last few years. It was really the predictable funding that we had over the last few years was pretty nice. Help plan, anyway. Continued flat funding of the BSA or one-time funding from the state will likely increase class sizes, put programs in jeopardy, or only continue to defer problems until the next year. And so I'll finish up with, you know, well, what does $12.3 million in cuts to the maintenance level services of budget look like in Fairbanks? We eliminate 29 district-wide positions, including assistant superintendents, management, maintenance staff, support staff, teachers, and reading and math tutors, budget savings of over $3.5 million. Will be, and again, this is based on the proposed budget that's before the school board right now, and we're in the process of meeting with our Citizens Budget Review Committee. This will change, I'm sure, but right now it's what they're looking at also. We'll be eliminating 28 elementary school positions, including a principal and 27 teaching positions, increasing kindergarten class sizes by 1, grades 1 through 3 by 1.5, and grades 4 through 6 by 2 for budget savings of $6.5 million. Eliminate 21.8 middle school and junior high school positions, including assistant principal and 20.8 teaching positions. Eliminate middle school team collaboration time and increase grades 7 through 8 class sizes by 1.5 and junior high by 2. Again, savings of about budget reductions of $2.2 million. Eliminate 16.2 senior high school positions, including 3 counselors, 3 library assistants, and 10.2 teaching positions. Increase grades 9 through 12 class size by 2, budget reductions of $1.4 million. And make across the board non-personnel cuts in most programs and services, including legal and risk support, recruiting, travel, advertising, operation and maintenance supplies and services, library support, professional development, instructional technology, school activity supplies, and lobbying services. Budget reductions over $2.1 million. So again, thank you for the opportunity to present today. We appreciate the past efforts of the legislature and recent increases in categorical SPED funding and district cost differentials. But continued flat funding the BSA will impact classrooms and programs and the educational experience that we can provide and the results we strive to achieve. Thank you.
First Representative Feige, then Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess one of your major planning numbers is your student counts in October, correct? The timing of that count and when that number is applied, because basically your money and your allocations are kind of figured out on the assumption of what that count will be, it requires you as the CFO to do a little bit of make a little bit of a guess or an estimation. If you were to take October's count and make that the number you used for planning for the next year, that is the following year to that year that the count is taken, would that affect your ability, how would that affect your ability to plan and basically do a little more planning without figuring in all these different contingencies?
Through the chair, Representative Feige, it would probably make a big difference. If I was a district in declining enrollment, it would probably help me a lot on that planning. If I was a district in increasing enrollment, depending on how the rest of the mechanism was going to work, it may not be as beneficial. I mean, again, it'd be nice to know that, like you mentioned, if we don't know what our true revenue picture is until mid-November, if we had some sort of hold harmless at last year's level, but then adjustments to decrease it over a couple, however you'd phase that in and out so it doesn't hit you all at once. But again, if you were decreasing enrollments and you were held harmless, that probably be a big thing. If you were increasing enrollments but did not get any additional funding for the increasing enrollments, then that would probably be problematic. Follow up?
And follow. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. There is a bill, and this is a shameless political plug, House Bill 313. I'd like your comments, and for all your other financial guys in the room, take a look at that, and maybe you want to weigh in on it.
Thank you. Representative Sisna, then Representative Wilson, then Representative Wilson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And it sounds like a really fine crafting has gone on here that's been taking place for a number of years and working to try to make the numbers all work out is what it sounds to me. But I have some concerns that I've been developing over the years and wasn't able to ask it before, but would love to find out if your community is incorporating increasing or decreasing SHOP programs, kind of programs that deal with energy or technical trade skills, the kinds of things that actually in a lot of Alaska are absolutely essential if you're going to survive, just plain old survival skills, right? And what we've been watching recently is that we've been pulling programs like that back to save money and do better in test scores. Yet those are survival skills that, especially when you're dealing with energy prices like we are, it really is what makes smaller communities decrease in size. And so the question I'd like to ask is, one, those trade skills, those kinds of trade skills, and what you're maybe doing in your school system for that. And two, have you seen people coming in from rural Alaska? Because when I'm going to communities, the small ones, what I'm seeing is that they're going to Fairbanks is one of the, depending upon where in the state they are. But are you seeing any increases in that? And what about the trade funds?
Through the chair, Representative Sisna. I'll tackle that a little bit, even though I promised my instructional people that I wouldn't get too much in instruction if they wouldn't get too much in explaining the foundation formula. So we have a deal going on there. But, a few years ago, we did have, our Hutchison Career Technical High School is a district-wide high school that is partnered with UAF. And then we have our welding, and we have, I think we have some strong programs in that area that deal it up. All our high schools have a vocational offer vocational offerings at to some level, or some there's more we'd like to do, and that is definitely a focus in our. I mean, that's a very strong focus in our district, and with the in our district, the vocational tech money that was over 5 years now in our district, that's $1 million this year, next year, and that's additional state support, very well appreciated. It's more categorical in what we're going to address, but we do focus on both tech capable. We do have the Construction Academy, and we do have the, again, Hutchison is all career pathways structure.
Okay, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It sounds like that you're going to have to lose a lot of teachers, and I can remember when Wrangell lost a third of their teachers 1 year and how devastating that was, and I was just wondering, what percent of all of your teachers that would be for the ones, and I know it's over 100, so.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson. It's perspective here a little bit. When you look at the maintenance level, again, we're adding in 22 jobs bill teachers that are still already in the building, so it's not really an addition, but the funding is addition. We're adding in the 23 special education, which is a mixture of teachers and aides. So we're building up some staff. If you look at our bottom line staffing, it would look like, okay, our maintenance level budget is building up 45 staff, but then we're going to turn around and then to get to a balanced budget, cut 95 staff. Of that 95, about 60 of them are our classroom teachers, and we have about 950, maybe 1,000 if we include the grant fund, but we have about 950 certificated staff in our district. And so it's, it, I mean, it's not taken lightly, and these are tough choices. So,
okay, Representative Feige, then Chair Wilson would like to wrap up the meeting with wrap up the meeting. Representative Feige.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure if you're aware, but recently this committee considered, and it's in front of the Finance Committee, a bill called House Bill 145, which is essentially a school choice bill. And it would allocate, assuming that a constitutional amendment is approved by the people to allow it, it would allow public monies to be expended based on the choice of the parents where that child goes to school, at perhaps private schools. How would that affect your financing in the district? I realize it's purely speculative on your part. I realize you may not be familiar with a lot of the details on the bill, but in general, how would that affect your financing and your ability to plan financing?
Through the chair, Representative Feige. Yeah, that I haven't sat down to do enough analysis. That obviously we're enrollment driven mm-hmm. for funding here, and so a lot depending on how the mechanism of the bill would work on administrative oversight and how that would really impact public schools, I'm not sure.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson was going to wrap up, explain for us what we can and cannot do, but I really appreciate you folks being here. This has been it's been very, very rich for us.
And I have one quick question before that. It seems like the administration is not, you know, I've heard that Fairbanks is top heavy. I don't see a whole lot in the decreases coming from the administrative part of it and the building on Fifth Avenue, as we all know of. I'd be curious how that fits in versus I hear a lot of teacher cutbacks, but not necessarily on that level. But you can get back to me on that. I just wanted to briefly say that I am the chair of the subcommittee for finance, and there are certain things we can and cannot do. We cannot touch the BSA or transportation. Those are formula-funded programs. Those have to be changes through the legislature. I've had people come to me and ask me to increase them, and we are not able to do that. Basically, what we do is that we are looking within the Department of Education itself on the programs that it has, whether or not it really is benefiting the districts. That would be nice to hear from the districts on those kind of benefits, whether or not mentoring specialists, literacy programs, all the different things the department does. What are those that are very good for you, and which of those would be better as maybe a grant program in which you would get those funds and be able to utilize them more specialty into your units? But there's been a little confusion on what we can and can't do, so I want to make sure you all knew. Thank you so much. This has been very helpful to all the committee members who mm-hmm. took time out to be here today. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. It's almost 10 o'clock. Our next Education Committee meeting will be 8 a.m. Monday, February 13th. We'll start promptly at 8 a.m. with Superintendent Rich Rhodes of Wrangell via Skype. Also, we'll have the Alaska Performance Scholarship Outcome Report from the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education that we did have to postpone. So if there's no further business, joint committee is adjourned.